This is a CBC podcast.
We are still not officially in a provincial election campaign, but that has not stopped a flurry of promises from political leaders in Saskatchewan. Scott Moe was in Prince Albert yesterday announcing a timber deal for a company in this province, which he hopes will lead to a mill.
The young families that now have an opportunity to have a career in the forestry industry like they did when I grew up. You see the new Victoria Hospital that's being built up there. Almost $1 billion investment with an expansion of services that's going to require 500 additional healthcare workers to service not only the community of Prince Albert, not only the surrounding communities, but the entire northern part of the province of Saskatchewan. You've seen some of the road infrastructure investments in twinning between here and Saskatoon, entries into the city of Saskatoon, some of the passing lanes. That's all in anticipation that we're going to have more trucks on the road in the years into the future. And what today's announcement is the private sector investment, and it is appreciated, and it's appreciated greatly. The private sector investment that has come about through a lot of work from a lot of different levels of governments and community leaders and private industry that is going to be able to not only utilize and use that public investment in recreation infrastructure and healthcare infrastructure and transportation infrastructure to ensure that we're going to be able to attract those young families to Prince Albert. Prince Albert, in my opinion, I've always been bullish on Prince Albert and where we're going when it comes to the growth of the city and the surrounding area. Today is a monumental day for that. It makes me so very proud to be standing here as a resident that lives in the area to be part of this announcement today.
That is the Premier speaking yesterday in Prince Albert. He hasn't officially kicked off the election yet, but along with the opposition leader, Carla Beck, Scott Moe has been making a lot of promises lately. For more on those, we've reached our political panel. Adam Hunter covers politics for CBC Saskatchewan. Murray Mandrick writes a political column in the Regina Leader Post. Hi, guys.
Good morning.
Happy
political
Friday.
Announcement?
What?
You guys are overly suspicious. What sounded political in that announcement? Come on.
Adam, we have heard a lot of these announcements. What is the latest this week?
Yeah, it's the not campaign right now. We're having a daily announcement from the NDP for the past like 2.5 weeks. The government's doing 4 or 5 newsers a day. And we heard yesterday's Premier Moe's in Prince Albert, which is in play for the Saskatchewan Party. They have Joe Hargrave not running again. He's a cabinet minister. And Nicole Rancourt, who lost the last election but was an MLA for the NDP, is running again to try and win that other seat back. So there are a lot of promises in there. You heard about talk about the hospital, twinning of highways, jobs, obviously a future mill potentially with this announcement yesterday. So that's the latest we've heard from Premier Moe. We had the start of the week with Jeremy Cockerell promising a new school in East Regina, something that Carla Beck already pledged to do as well. And we have Carla Beck promising to cut the children's tax on children's clothes, the PST, some grocery items, take the PST off of that. Obviously, already talking about cutting the gas tax for the time being, for a short time, and also holding line on other taxes. So just a flurry of announcements and promises from both the government and also the NDP.
What stands out for you, Murray, from these promises?
Well, the one announcement that's not even a provincial announcement, it's a Pierre Poilievre announcement that the NDP are not going to support a carbon tax, which we knew. Obviously, they've hinted that they didn't like it. But I think a lot hinges on that announcement. For one, there's a lot of people that kind of like getting their carbon tax rebate that would normally support the NDP. There's a lot of people on the left that support the NDP that argue that we need a carbon tax. And some of those people are called NDP candidates because they basically said that in the past. So that's a real problem for Carla Beck right now. Yet it's a practical thing, politically speaking, because everyone in the province has been conditioned not to or practically does not like the carbon tax, a combination of the two. There's a lot of practical reasons not to like it, and there's because it keeps going up every 5 minutes, and that's kind of annoying. So for some people that aren't getting the rebate that keeps pace with that, that's hugely problematic, and those some people are entire industries. So it's going to be a question as to whether Carla Beck and the NDP are going to be seen as pragmatic and reasonable, or whether this is opportunistic. And I think a lot of their whole campaign kind of hinges on that particular notion. Are these the people that we can trust, or is this the crazy left that that Scott Moe is warning us about? So I think that's actually one of the more critical announcements or critical things that Carla Beck has said in the early goings in this pre-campaign.
When will this campaign officially begin?
It feels like it started already, but it hasn't officially, and that's why we're still calling the premier, not the leader of the Saskatchewan Party, and that's why these announcements that they're making are through, you know, the government and the government bureaucracy and not Saskatchewan Party campaign announcements, which is not something that's benefited to any of the other parties. But the kind of drop dead date for calling the election is the 30th or October 1st. The 30th is Truth and Reconciliation Day. So I don't expect it to be called that day. Of course, it could be. That's a Monday. It could be, you know, the Friday before. Typically, they try and go on a Monday and have that last weekend for prep and things like that. And this will be really different because the last election campaign was COVID and we weren't at big rallies. We weren't at big events. We didn't get to see crowds. We didn't get a sense of the momentum. And you know, covering these, that you get to talk to people, you get to find out what's going on, some gossip behind the scenes, and that'll be interesting to see how that all plays out this time around and how the candidates and leaders handle that. And then we have a few other parties that are thrown into the mix as well. So we're expecting the end of the month. That's still 2 weeks away, and that's still a lot more announcements for the government and the NDP and others to make.
What do you expect to see change, Murray, when the campaign officially begins?
Well, believe it or not, it's going to get a whole lot nastier because the first 2 weeks of the campaign, particularly in the social media era for the last couple of elections, is the one in which candidates from, or parties from the opposite venue drag out everything about candidates, been posted on social media, on everything else. So the first 2 weeks of the campaign take on an immediate nastier tone. And we're going to see that because we're going to see official political ads as opposed to just mostly the caucus ads that are being paid for right now. We're going to see a lot more of intense politics because it's a little closer this time, I think. I don't think the NDP have enough to win in terms of government, but they're certainly going to make a bigger pitch. And I think they have more capacity to do so. It's going to be a little bit more intense that way. I think the SAS party are feeling the heat a bit more, so they're going to respond in kind. And as Adam said, they couldn't really do that in COVID. So I think you're going to see a little bit of a different tone when the actual campaign gets started because all these things will be happening at once. And maybe we'll see a promise that we're kind of interested in because basically everything the NDP have said is stuff that they've been talking about promising. And the SAS party are talking about their record. And I don't know if I necessarily want to run on my record if I was, you know, the SAS party strategist because there are problems with the economy and other things that they've done and lots of stuff that the NDP have dragged out. So I'm looking for that golden ring promise that is still going to come out. And I think that'll come out in the first 2 weeks of the campaign, sometimes around the release of the entire platforms.
Adam, what is happening with the other political parties? We've talked a lot about the governing Saskatchewan party and the opposition NDP, but how about the others?
Yesterday, the PC Party of Saskatchewan and the Buffalo Party made some news. There was some flirtation over a potential merger, and the PCs called a news conference and said, we're not going to do it. We thought about it. We did consider it. They said that they were the ones that reached out to the Buffalo Party, interestingly, and kind of pitched this to them and then decided to pull back. I talked to the leader of the Buffalo Party, Phil Zajac, yesterday, who said they were disappointed that there wasn't going to be a deal. They thought that they had a good pitch. Ultimately, the PCs say that there were some policy issues where they didn't agree on. Rose Bushel, the leader, didn't want to get into too many details. We asked about, was it the history that the Buffalo Party has been sort of starting off as a separatist party? And she said, no, they kind of moved away from that. But we think that they're focused too much on national, international, sort of federal policies, things that we don't impact us here. You know, we're the party of Diefenbaker. We need to stick to the central right where we are. And so that was sort of the diversion there. They didn't rule out a future marriage potentially. These are also two parties that didn't combine for 5% of the vote last time, right? So they had a very small impact. They didn't run a full slate of candidates. The Buffalo Party ran 17, finished actually second in four constituencies, which I know surprised a lot of people, surprised us a little bit on election night. The Conservatives, they got less than 2%. So not a huge impact as far as their electoral, but we'll see what happens on the trail. Both are saying they want to get as many candidates as possible. They kind of stopped short of saying they could get to 61, but the Buffalo Party said they'll have a candidate in every rural riding.
Murray, before you go, you wrote about Treaty 4 today, and we've talked a ton this week leading up to Sunday's 150th anniversary of the signing. And we've just talked today about all the promises politicians are making now, but what about keeping the promises made 150 years ago? How well do you think we've done on that?
Horribly. It's a great question. And if people understood that question and the significance of that question, the debate in this country would be very different. There was two critical things that Treaty 4 did. It promised a school in every reserve. In essence, it promised education. It promised to train First Nation people and convert them from the hunter-gatherer existence to agriculture. Neither one of those promises have been properly fulfilled in 150 years. And that was okay for generation upon generation of us who voted for federal governments. First Nations people weren't allowed to vote until July 1st, 1960, so they didn't even have a say in the matter. But because it was beneficial, the narrative was created that First Nations people weren't capable, they weren't able to do this, they weren't capable people that could do this. And for a large extent, we bought into that narrative. And this is the history that has to be rewritten. And in 150 years, it isn't. Only in the last couple of years are we putting up road signs to say where treaties are. We don't know what's in the treaties. We've only been taught about the treaties in the last few years. Remember Brad Wall telling us that, look, you know, I know more about the Treaty of Versailles than I do about Treaty 4, Treaty 6. And I think that that has to change if public attitude will ever change, and public attitude has to change to address these issues. It begins with understanding that very question you asked: what was in Treaty 4, and why were the promises broken? I have an opus running tomorrow on that whole thing, so sorry to plug, but it's an important thing to do because people do need to understand what it is that allows them to have their property, it allows them to have their freedom, it allows them to have their houses and their prosperity and everything else. It's Treaty 4. It existed 31 years before there was a Saskatchewan. And I think we have to come to terms with how important that treaty is and why First Nations people today feel it's broken and how that has affected them.
Thank you very much, you guys.
You're welcome.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.